Ready for your now, Tex.
Ladies and gentlemen, it's time to start the show. Please put y'all hands together for my good friend, Mr. John Richardson.
Hello.
Hi. Hello. Thanks for coming. Thanks. Let me just pop this on there. It's nothing. So, let's have some fun. Establish the rules. Hello up there. Are you all right? Yes. Are you okay? Are you specifically, are you okay?
At 36 weeks pregnant.
What's that? Is that 8 months?
Yeah.
And it's a 9-month sort of thing, isn't it? Just showing off my skills. I'm clued up on the old vaginas. I know all the facts. I've passed my theory, it's the practical. Just get there one day. So you're the, you know. I don't know the terms for the man. What do they call that? Father, isn't it? That's what they call that one. And what are your names? Hannah.
Jim.
Hannah and Jim. Good name, Jim. I'm drawn to you, Jim, because you're exactly the sort of man that if I saw you in the street, would scare the shit out of me. I could tell your balls work by just looking at you, put it that way. I didn't even know that Hannah was pregnant. I could have just identified you as an impregnator. That's... What do you do for a living?
I work in security.
You work in security, I bet you do. I'll just stand next to things, John, and they stay where they are. That's what I do. Good. Well, anyway, thank you for coming. I hope you enjoy your evening. I plan to. This is nice, isn't it? And, you know, you only get to do rooms like this when you get to a level where people know who you are, and that has its good and bad points, as I discovered in Dorchester, where I checked into the hotel, and the girl on reception... No fucking clue who I was. Right, fair enough. I kept giving her clues, but she wasn't having it. I imagine 8 out of 10 of your rooms are taken. Nothing. Not just, no, we've got loads of rooms. So, have I got news for you? I'd like one! Ah! Anyway, she checks me into her room. She goes, room 16, right, off I go up the stairs, right? But the girl next to her on reception, she has recognised me, so she taps her on the leg. She goes, that's that guy! And she goes, what guy? And she goes, that Italian chef, Gino... And then she'd have gone, oh, talked to him for quite a bit, to be honest. He didn't sound Italian. It's more, you know, like if someone's left a Hoover on next door, it was that sort of noise. Oh, maybe it's that comedian, maybe he's here doing a gig, right? And then she's realised that I'm here to perform to people, and she's put me in the shittest room in the hotel because she thought I was a travelling salesman or something like that. She's gone, there you go, in this shit room, you're only going to cry in it anyway, aren't you? So she panics and she phones the room, right? When I get to the room, the phone is ringing, and what she means to say is, it's been brought to my attention that you might be about to tell 500 local residents that this hotel is a shithole. Because I've given you no reason to doubt that this hotel is a shithole. But would you like, I'll give you a cheeky better room and we'll just never mention this, we'll pretend it never happened, right? That's what she meant to say, but she's panicking now, so she came out with something slightly less welcoming. Here's what she said. She went, "Hiya, it's reception here. We know who you are, and we know what room you're in." Which just scared the shit out of me, if I'm honest. Oh, really? Well, I won't be masturbating in this room then. Thank you very much. So I'm happy to be here, which is terrible, really, because I sort of made a name for myself not being happy about anything. And in the last sort of year or so, I've become happier. And it's very dangerous. It's really bad news because obviously the happy, and I speak to you safe in the knowledge you're not happy, or you wouldn't be here, would you? Let's be honest. If you were happy, you wouldn't have paid for someone else to make you laugh, would you? You'd have just stayed at home and laughed at your walls and the lamps. Curtains, what a life! No, you've come out because you're miserable, and the only assumption you've made is that I'm more miserable than you are, and so you'll leave feeling better about yourselves. Because I have a shitter life than you do. That's why you've come here. And since I've become happy, my worry is that I can tell I'm becoming boring. I'm becoming much less interesting. Even my dreams now are so dull. I used to have dreams where spiders fell off ceilings and turned into dogs and bit me. And here's a dream I had recently. See if you can work out what's going on here. I had a dream. I went back to a house I used to live in and tidied the loft. Mysterious subconscious, that, isn't it? What do you do at night time, John? Admin from the past. And here's how I know it's not just the dream is boring, but I am also boring. That was a wet dream, and it really shouldn't have been, should it? I really enjoyed it. I thought I'd lost those certificates. That's the noise I've given myself when I ejaculate in a dream. You never know, do you, what noise you make? Because obviously you're asleep. I assume it's different. That's not the noise I make when I'm awake. If I ejaculate when I'm awake, it's more like this. Pow. But at night, I imagine it's something different. What I've given myself, it's the noise of an elderly Jewish American man going to the shops and a bird shit goes right down his neck. That's what that noise is. I gotta go get myself some bread for the aisle. Goddamn bird shitting down my neck all day. I don't want to be happy. I don't want you to think that I've become happy deliberately. I want to be unhappy, right? And that's why I bring out the hat. The hat is a symbol of how good I am at maintaining unhappiness by doing things I don't want to do, right? The hat I bought when I went to do a program called Real Man's Road Trip, where I lived with some cowboys, right? And you're already thinking, John, Real Man's Road Trip, that doesn't sound like the sort of show you should be involved in. And I agree with you. When they asked me to be in the program, I'm not an idiot. I didn't think they'd had a meeting where they said, Jesus, you better get Richardson involved, or this will have no validity whatsoever. I knew they'd had the other meeting where they'd gone, what's it called? Real Man's Road Trip. Right, we'll get one real man and a fanny who'll cry. Better telly, isn't it? A crying fanny, right? I know I'm not a real man. I know I get reminders constantly, whatever a man is, I'm not one. When we started this tour, I was in King's Lynn. I was a little bit hungry when I got to the gig, so I asked for a snack. I said, can you bring me some crisps or something? And they brought me the manliest crisp on the market, which you all know is McCoy's, damn right. Straight away, manly crisp, that innit? They brought me a bag of salt and vinegar McCoy's, and I ate those crisps. And I don't know if it was the salt or the vinegar or a combination of both, but they made my fucking tongue bleed. Pretty manly shit, that, isn't it? And I'm no fool. I know that the cowboys of America will not be impressed by that sort of response. Where's that boy crying? I had some crisps. And then they've the salt and the vinegar, they've done me a real mischief. I don't generally do, you know, sort of laddie, manly things. Most of the things I do are contrary to what a real man would do. I'm even trying to cut down my drinking because I've been made paranoid by the news. Half a bottle of wine, they say, is borderline alcoholism now. Correct me if I'm wrong, but when you open a bottle of wine, it lasts for 2 nights. So you have 2 goes to drink it all. So half a bottle a night isn't alcoholism, is it? That's a fucking deadline. It's not my drinking I'm trying to cut down, it's the hangovers, right? I don't mind a drink, I just don't want to be hungover anymore because I've been sick and tired of being hungover. Because in this country, we sort of not only see a hangover as a necessity, we actually see it as a badge of honour, don't we? So if you phone a friend tomorrow and you go, you're all right, how are you doing? And they go, oh God, I'm a bit hungover today, actually, right? What you should say there is a caring friend. You should say, oh, that's a shame, isn't it? That you've deliberately pumped so much of a toxin into your own body that now you can't drink water without being sick. You won't say that, though, will you? You'll say what every one of us will say there in that situation. You'll say, fucking legends! Amazing. What happened last night, then? And I say, well, I just stayed in, but I couldn't stop drinking because I'm a despair at what's happening to the world. Ridiculous. Do you know what a hangover is? Your stomach saying to the rest of your body, just piss off, please. Nothing comes down here until I deal with what you did to me last night. You don't even like Malibu. Half a litre of that shit down here at 3 a.m. Oh, arsehole. At which point your arsehole will say, don't bring me into this. I'm still dealing with a kebab they had on the way home. Chili sauce, I'll show you. I just don't want to be hungover anymore, right? But I enjoy a drink. And I'll be honest with you, I drink exactly as much as I used to. All I do to avoid hangovers is I have water every now and again. When I go out, I have a little bit of water, right? And obviously, as a man, I have to do that in secret, right? Because you can't stand up on a lad's night out and say, hey, boys, I'm going to go and get some water. Does anyone want anything from the bar? Because generally, they say, yeah, when you get to the bar, John, could you keep on going and piss off home? Come on, to have a good time, haven't we? Think about that during the week and try again next weekend, all right? You don't respect men who look after... And I'll be honest, I don't think you're any different. In terms of your alcohol consumption and its effect on your own health, I think you're quite happy to drink yourself into the point where you're puking into the gutter. But women, I just think you care for each other. Just that instant response is more likely to be kind. That if you see a group of girls out, it's more likely to hear someone say, she's in a state, isn't she? Jesus, should we get her a water? Otherwise, she's going to be really sick tomorrow. Right. With men, it's more likely to hear, oh, John's in a state, isn't he? I reckon we could kill him. Worth a shot, innit? Should we have a go? Steve, get him a pint of whiskey, tell him it's apple juice, see what happens. Half a pint, actually, he's nearly dead. Wasting money. Stag do's are the worst. If you try not to drink to the point where you're sick, stag do's, I go on a few now because obviously I'm at that age where a lot of my friends are getting married and they invite me to stag do's. And don't get me wrong, I'm delighted to be invited on the stag do. And I wouldn't be your first port of call, would I? We're having a crazy weekend. Let's get Richardson down here. People obviously want to go and get shit-faced on their stag do's, and that's what happened. The last one I went on, we met at St Pancras Station at 9 o'clock in the morning for a nice crate of warm lagers off the floor. All dressed as superheroes as well, because it's nice to look like a bellend, isn't it? All in sort of cheap 20 quid Argos superhero costumes, all except for one of us who pretended he hadn't got that email and turned up in shirt and jeans. That was me, make no bones about it. I didn't want to look like a dickhead in this country. I thought, fair enough, when we get to Germany, don't mind being a dickhead, no one knows who I am in Germany. Sometimes people recognise me here and I'd rather they didn't get to work and say, yeah, I saw that little one off 9 out of 10 cats on the train. Yeah, I think he's had a mental breakdown. He was dressed as Batman crying. I just thought I'll dress normally in this country, right? So we get there, we're all drinking our lagers, and Spider-Man spills his, it goes all down here, looks like he's pissed his pants. And I'll be honest at this point, it looked less like a stag do and more like a Fathers for Justice reunion. So we enjoy our lagers, and then we get on the train to the airport, and we have some more lagers on the train to the airport, right? And then we get to the airport, and we have some more lagers at the airport, right? And we're all getting a little bit pissed now. So when we get on the plane, I sneak to the back and I have my first tactical water. I told them I was going for a piss, right? I did have a piss. I've got quite a weak bladder. I used to wet the bed a lot. Didn't really need to tell you that, but it's nice to share, isn't it? If you're suffering, when you go to the toilet, you just stop a few times and it builds up the muscle. 2 years dry. Thank you very much. Really applauding. Well done. Well done. Anyway, go to the back, I have a little water while no one's looking, right? I get back on the stag do, right? We land, we drink our way down the strip, and then we check into our hotel, right? And I sneak up to my room when I'm in there, I have a bit of water as well, right? And then we meet up again. We get 2 bars in, and that's when I realise that the drinking now has become a problem, right? We're not just drunk. I've probably spent about 500 quid coming on this stag do to show my friend that I'm glad he's met someone and he's found happiness, and he doesn't know I'm here anymore. In fact, nobody knows I'm here anymore. I realised at this point I could piss off now and nobody would notice. And do you know how I know that? Because I pissed off and nobody noticed. Just went, I heard the phrase, we better wipe that sick off him or we won't get in the titty bar. And it's very much a parachute phrase, that, for me. Not just on stag do's, if I hear it in the library or in Asda. So I think things are about to go badly here. I'll make a sharp exit. So I told him I was going to the toilet. I went back to the hotel. I went via a garage where I bought a big bag of crisps that you can't buy in this country, which is the only reason I travel, really, in search of new crisps. I just stayed in the hotel all night. I watched the first session of the World Snooker Final, and I had one of the best evenings of my entire life. Thank you very much. Really was incredible. I like crisps. I like being in hotels, and I really like snooker. Snooker is the best. Snooker is basically tidying up disguised as sport. Unbelievable what they've managed to pull off there. You get a big messy table and whoever tidies up the most wins. That is evolution in action, that is. They even call it clearing up. Oh, he's cleared up lovely there. He fucking has as well. What a treat. I tell you, if you've never been to see it live as well, after the game's finished, someone comes out with a little hoover and hoovers the... Pow. Get right in them corners, right down the end, get all the dust. Oh, yeah, just touch me with those white gloves on. Imagine that, it'd be like being done by an angel, wouldn't it? Old Jan Verhaas, with his big hands. But so... Anyway, sorry. Completely forgot you were here then. Just getting tugged off by a snooker referee in my mind there. Odd how happy I was as well. Really nervous as well, because while I'm watching the snooker, I'm thinking, oh, I'm going to be in trouble here, because when I go down in the morning, they'll all say, he's the one that left, make him drink piss, and they'll all piss in a glass, and I'll have to drink it. I went down in the morning, they went, hey, fucking amazing last night, wasn't it? And I went, yeah. Didn't even know I'd gone. Didn't even realise. I wasn't lying either. Ding Junhui come from 4-0 back to going 4-all at the end of the first session. Absolutely electric in a way no stag do could ever be, as far as I'm concerned. But I do actually regret it, because when I went down for breakfast, they all got stories, and someone's just wandered off and come back with a tattoo and a dog. I was like, I should be doing stuff like that. I've never done anything. You know, they say in your life you only regret the things you don't do, and there is some truth to that. And one specific moment in my life that I just wanted to prove to myself that sometimes I can do something that would be out of character for me. I was in the Lake District on my own, just went for a little walk, packed a little lunch with some cheese and red wine, and off I went on my walk. It's not supposed to be a funny bit, those of you who are laughing at that. It's supposed to be a romantic image I'm creating there, not just, ah, you got your lunch, have you, you wanker? Little sandwich bags. I went for a little wander on my own, and it was out of season, there was no one else around, completely on my own, and it's edifying that, isn't it, when you, even in this modern world, you can still find space where there's no one around. I saw a red squirrel. Amazing Thursday, really was cracking. And then I saw up on that, on the hillside there, I saw a weeping willow tree, and I thought, you know what, I'm going to go under that, and I'm going to have a little moment to myself. I don't tell you this through any pride. I'm not telling you because I'm delighted to share with 3,000 strangers the day I sent off for a wank under a tree. I hope it seems out of character. That's exactly why I wanted to do it. I just wanted to, do you know what? That's exactly the sort of thing I wouldn't do. And there's no one around for miles. When I'm not advocating doing this on the bus or on the high street. I'm just saying sometimes just, you know, do something impulsive, right? And couples get to do it, don't you? You go outside and you do it, and then you go to dinner parties and you go, oh, where's the weirdest place you two have ever made love? And they go, oh, God, well, you know the A40 was that little chef? Yeah, well, one night. And we go, oh, my God, we've done it there as well. Isn't that weird? Isn't it weird? You think you're cool just because there's two of you. It's an act of love and romance. It's still disgusting. Don't delude yourselves. Just, I'm not allowed to join in that conversation, am I? I can't kick the kitchen door in and go, I've had a wank there. So I just thought, you know what, just because I haven't got anyone doesn't mean I can't be a bit, you know, naughty. So I went off there, and I didn't do it right. Obviously, I didn't do it right. And that's why I tell you that so that you know the reason I didn't do it and why I consider that I have a problem with the way my brain works, right? Because there are obviously many good reasons not to masturbate outside. Fear of being caught, midges, wasps, that kind of thing. The reason I didn't do it right, I got over there and I thought, you know what, I'll just do the thing here, there's no one around, no one's ever going to find out about it, right, I'll just finish the job. And then I thought, what if I do the thing here to its logical conclusion, right, and then at some point in the near future they find a body nearby. I mean, they start checking around for DNA. There's a big puddle of mine under a tree. Now, like I said, there are many good reasons not to masturbate outside. Fear of being imprisoned for a crime you did not commit. It's just a brain working too hard to deprive a life of any joy, right? So that's why I took this program. I thought, I'm going to go there and I'm going to, you know, prove a few people wrong. I'm going to be a real man. And they'll go, Jesus, I didn't know you were capable of that, right? So practiced on the plane for meeting cowboys. And obviously you don't say hello to a cowboy, do you? You say howdy. That's the greeting. So I practiced my howdy. And I picked a nice little mid-range howdy that just went up at the end to suggest interest, right? Howdy. Lovely, that, isn't it? That's it. I thought, where do you meet cowboys? You meet them in a saloon, don't you, with the swing doors, right? So I practiced that. Don't push them. That's weak. Kick them, don't you? Just kick them and walk in. Oof. Thought that one through on the plane. Kick him, let him come back, and then get in on the second one. That's what I do. Poof, poof. confident man's entrance into a bar, that, isn't it? Drop the skip when I do it for real, I thought, right. Got out there, looking forward to this, right, meet some cowboys, right. I got there, and the first problem was we didn't meet the cowboys in a bar. We met them in the field, where they were doing boy things to cows, which is... that's what their job is, isn't it? But they don't say that, because it sounds weird. What do you do? I'm a cowboy. That's cool. What do you do? I do boy things to cows. Can you leave my house, please? I could see them over in the field, these two cowboys, right, and they had this bull, and they were sort of penning it into the corner like that. It was kicking, right, and wandered over for my greeting, right, and he didn't open with what I was expecting to. What he opened with instead, he went, "Get over here, boy, I need you to take this knife, slit open the nutsack on the top of this bull, reach inside his body, grab his testicles and pull the testicles till he ain't in the goddamn bull no more." Hell yeah. Sorry about my voice, I had some quips on the plane. I genuinely had no idea that for meat production you have to rip the bollocks out of bulls. And you do that apparently because bulls with their testicles are too randy to be safe. They'll just, if you leave their testicles in, I'm sure like Jim here, just hazardously randy. They'll shag all the other cows to death and the farmer will come in to see what's going on and they'll shag old McDonald to death and then shag the gate open and rampage their way across America, shagging everything, right? So you take the testicles out to subdue the bull, right? And I have to tell you, that may work in the long term. It certainly doesn't in the short term. In the short term, it rather pisses them off, if I'm honest. And I did not want to rip the testicles out of a bull. And here's why I tell you this. Here's why I want you to know how good I am at being unhappy, right? Because I decided there and then, not only did I not want to rip the testicles out of that bull, I also didn't want to eat meat anymore. And that's what I did there and then. Not only did I not come back a cowboy, I came back a vegetarian. Unbelievable. And I tell you, that was 2.5 years ago. That is a decision that has made my life absolutely shitter. Every day, every meal now, even ones that didn't used to have meat on, like cornflakes. I just think, oh, this would be lovely with a bit of veal on it, this one. It's not so much missing the meat, it's what you're forced to eat instead of meat. It's good for if you are trying to keep your weight down but you don't want to exercise, because you end up skipping a lot of meals because they're pointless. Do you want the, no, I'll see you at dinner time, we'll try again. Tofu, what is tofu? Disgusting, yes. Don't know what's inside it. The worst one I have to eat is halloumi now. Yeah. What I really like is a cheese that doesn't melt when it's hot and squeaks when you eat it. Halloumi? Oh, yes, please. Rancid. How are you getting on with that lamb? Oh, it's melting in the mouth, is it? That's interesting, because the cheese seems to have an intruder alarm fitted to it. I still eat prawns, I'll be honest, I still eat prawns, because what else am I going to have in a curry? Carrot? I'd rather kill myself, thank you very much. Honestly, if you phone an Indian takeaway and say, can I have the vegetarian? They just stop listening. You might as well be saying, I don't really like flavour or texture. You pop a cauliflower on now and I'll pick it up in a week. I still have a prawn jalfrezi if I go out for a curry, and every now and again I eat meat. There's no way to... Like, twice a year, but by accident, I get pissed, and instead of going to a taxi rank, I go to McDonald's, and instead of saying, can you take me home, please, I say, can you give me a Big Mac? I'll pay you double if you feed me it, and then I don't have to touch it. Really is. That deprived and abused piece of beef is the best thing that goes in my mouth all year. It really is. It's so good that I have to hate myself solidly for 3 days afterwards just to even it out. I've been on stag do's where men I know to be married have slept with prostitutes, and on the plane back, they've been consoling me because I had a fucking Big Mac. It's how much I will commit to self-hatred after a burger. Well, the important thing is, John, I think we've all made mistakes, but you have to move forward in your life. You can't let it ruin the rest of your life. I think we're coming into land, mate. I'm just going to have to go and wash my penis. Okay. It's regrettable. So, that, you know, I did have you were wondering, with all this, you know, reluctance to be happy, how did you end up becoming happy? And it's because I had a turning point. I had a significant moment in my life. Something happened which changed the course of my life, right? And it happened after the wedding of the friend whose stag do I'd been on, right? We went back to America. America is a country, of course, which prides itself on individuals being able to do whatever they want to do, which is not something I am comfortable with, if I'm honest. You can do whatever you like in America, and what I like to do instead is think of things I'd like to do, imagine them ending with me getting hurt, and stay inside and sitting down. Right. So we go out for my friend's wedding, and after the wedding, what happens is we go to a cabin in the wilderness, right? And we decide we're gonna drink and play cards and get to know each other again, right? And when we get to the cabin, there's a slight problem initially, which is there's something in the cabin which I hadn't encountered before, which is insects. Right, now, I say that because you think, well, we've got insects. We haven't got insects. We've got midges and flies. We've got flying toys, is what we've got. In America, they've got things called hornets and a thing called a cockroach. Now, if you've never seen a cockroach before, they're about the size of a Labrador. If you imagine that Labrador is driving something like a Fiat Seicento, that'll give you an idea of the build of the thing right now. With most insects, I'll be honest, what I do is I scream and I run away from them. That's my first policy. But obviously you can't do that if they're in your house. You have to deal with them a different way. And policy number two is to stand on them. I'm not proud of that, but let's be honest, there's billions of them. So I'll just... Right, now, the problem with a cockroach, you stand on a cockroach and absolutely nothing changes. They just carry on about their business. Dragging you along with them. If you could get on two, you could ride them into town like that. Built like tanks they are, right? So I have to elevate to option number three, right? And option number three is to drink until I can't feel them crawling all over my flesh anymore. Because obviously, as we all know, that cockroaches crawl in your mouth while you're asleep, they lay eggs in your stomach and you die. So what I do is I drink an awful lot of whiskey, right? And by the end of the evening, as the smallest one in the group, I'm now what you would call royally shit-faced. I go up to bed, pop a little plastic bag over my head so they can't get me while I'm asleep. I'm not an idiot. Anyway, I drink a lot of whiskey, right? I go to bed. Come down in the morning, I'm feeling very sick, right? And my only hope is that all my friends feel as sick as I do, and that's the end of today, isn't it? Say, what do you want to do today? I say, I really want to sit still and not say anything. And then sporadically look out of a window, think of some toast and be sick. I get down there, they're all fine because they're bigger than me and they're not scared of anything like insects, so they're planning the day out. And my mate goes, hey, John, there's a lake down the road. We're going to go and see if we can hire a speedboat. I just can't tell you the many ways in which that's not what I wanted to do with my day, right? When he said that, I heard it in the voice of Michael Burke because I grew up watching a programme called 999 with Michael Burke. It all started with things like that. If you haven't seen the programme, what it was is people nearly died, and instead of chalking that up to experience, we used to reconstruct it with actors for fun. And we'd have Michael Burke's sobering commentary so you could really enjoy it, right? Because, let's be honest, they might as well have called that programme Sometimes Dickheads Get What's Coming to Them. Uniquely moronic people on that programme. You have Michael Burke saying, Steve was a diabetic who hadn't eaten for 3 months when he decided to swim the English Channel. This is going to be a fun one. Everyone gather round. Bring those crisps I bought back from the holiday. And then they spiral out, so someone calls the Coast Guard because he's drowning, but the Coast Guard's pawned his arms to buy drugs and nobody knew, so he sets off in the boat but can't steer, so he runs straight over Steve, knocking him out, and tangling his ponytail in the propeller, and they drag each other to the coast of France. Where they're shouting, please help, we don't know what to do, which is the French for fucking bring it if you think you're hard enough. A whole war with a village, right? So when he said that, I heard Michael Burke saying, the four alcoholics decided to hire a vehicle they'd never driven before in a country they didn't know. We're going to die today. That's what's going to happen. We're going to die on a boat today, or off a boat. That's the great thing about boats, you can die on or off them. I'm really going to have to stop this happening, right? And it was too early then, so they bundled me into the back of the van. And I'm secretly content that you can't just get speedboats, can you? Because they're too big, do you know what I mean? Like, in this country, if you went to the Lake District, say, excuse me, can I have a speedboat? They'd say, hi, have you got a speedboat and your speedboat licence? In America, it's slightly different, you see. In America, you drive down to a lake and you'll find a shack by that lake, and you walk into the shack, and behind the desk will be a toothless local. You approach the local and you say, excuse me, we're not from around here. Can we have a speedboat? And he will reply, sure as shit you can have a speedboat. This here's America, son. Go out on a speedboat. That is a hauntingly accurate recollection of exactly what happened. 5 minutes before, I was vomiting at the thought of toast. Now, I'm about to be given the keys to a fucking speedboat. All he said was, he said, you can have a speedboat so long as one of y'all got a driving licence. And my friend went, yeah, I've got a driving licence. I said, yeah, he's got a driving licence for a different vehicle in a different land. I'm still not sure what relevance a UK driving licence is to a speedboat in America. If I'm honest, you can't go to Australia and say, excuse me, can I have that hot air balloon? Of course you can, mate. Can I just ask, have you ever been on Dodgems? Moronic country, right? So he's drawing it through, and I think I've got my first chance here to save everybody's life. They'll not thank me for it at the time, but I'm not going to die today, right? So I said, oh, I don't suppose you've brought your paper counterpart, though, have you? Looks like I won't be able to go, mate. That's just only half a licence he's given you there. You're not even listening. Mate. This is a licence as far as I'm concerned. Pink, motherfucker. Ain't never seen one of those before. Let's go get the keys to the boat. Off he goes to get the keys. We conger off behind him, right? As we're going across the shop, my friend notices a fridge which is full of beers. And he says, excuse me, are we allowed to buy these beers? And he says, sure as shit you can buy those beers. This here's America, son. Get shit-faced. Go out on a speedboat. His roof's in tatters. We're now walking down to the lakeside with a crate of lagers under each arm and the keys to a speedboat, right? And I think, well, we're definitely going to die today. That's a given now. At least the alcohol will numb the pain of death. Right. We get down to the side of the lake for what I'm hoping will be a 30-minute to one-hour tutorial on how to drive a speedboat. Various do's and don'ts of modern speedboatery. He chucks the keys in the boat. He goes, have a good day. Don't hit any other boats. Which is really the sort of sentence that if you have to say to someone, you shouldn't really be giving them the keys to a speedboat, I think. Yeah, I wonder if they know not to drive directly into another speedboat. So now I'm convinced this is going to be the last day of my life, right? And we get in the speedboat, and sure enough, after 4 to 5 hours, I'd had one of the best days of my entire life. Yeah. It's an awkward moment, that, isn't it? And all I would say is if you feel let down by the end of that story, imagine how pissed off I was. I went out there in good faith to die in a horrific accident that day. And I had to climb off my little high horse and admit I had a lovely day and thank them for inviting me. It's the first time in my life I've been driven to do something I wouldn't have done on my own. And I've never laughed so much in my entire life. Me and my friend Nick pissing ourselves, right? Which is good, because we had a bit of an argument in the shop while they're sorting out the speedboat. He came up to me, and bear in mind I'm hungover, I'm tired. He said, oh, John, will you give me a hand? I want to buy a hat. I said, well, it seems like a sort of one-man job to me, that. If I'm honest, you buy a hat and then you've got the hat. That's hat purchase. And he said, no, it's $30, a lot to spend on a hat, you see. And I said, well, it is, but then the price of the hat is the thing you pay to get the hat. You know, it fluctuates, but it's the same deal, really. And he said, no, I just want to make sure I'm still going to be wearing England. You know, I want to wear it when we get back. And I said, well, they're not going to take it off you at customs, are they? You know, unless it's made of knives, because that's a knife, then, you're thinking of, not a hat. And he went, we take a picture of me in it so I can see what it looks like. And I'm really losing it now. It's going to look like whatever hat it is on your fucking head. You're 30, you must have a rough idea of what your head looks like now. Imagine the hat on top of it. So he drags me over there. I took the picture. I go, there you go. It looks like you in that fucking hat. Right. We get down to the boat, right? We get in, we put it in gear, we speed off. It flies off his head. He never sees it again. Genuinely one of the happiest moments of my entire life. I know that doesn't make me a good friend, but really an absolute highlight, if I'm honest. If I'm ever depressed, I don't remember anything I've done. I just remember that moment there. Just... such an amazing day, though. I was laughing, I had a few beers, because I'm enjoying myself, right? I have a go driving the boat, right? And it genuinely is a real sort of a moment in my life where I think, I wonder how much in my life I've never done before that would have ended like this, really having fun, right? And to illustrate how much fun I'm having, right, we're more up in the middle of the lake and we eat some food and drink some beers, right? And I'm so excited, I rip my top off right now. I never expose my titties in this country, right? It's something of a rule I have, right? But out there, just rip my top off, right, and I shout, spring break! Just jump off the side of a boat into a lake, and I'm really enjoying myself splashing around in the middle of the lake on my own in America, feeling all independent. And then a fish touched me, I shit my pants. Got back in the boat. Who lets you swim in a lake with fucking fish in it? Could have been killed. So anyway, I got back from America, right, and the speedboat incident, and I looked back over the things I haven't done in my life and the things I regret, and obviously, you know, wanking under a tree is one of them. It's not the main one, if I'm honest. The main thing I regret when I look back at my life is relationships. That's the thing I've never done because of this part of my brain which assumes things will end badly, right? And the reason I assume relationships end badly is the overwhelming majority of evidence. Seems fair, doesn't it? I mean, I would believe in relationships a lot more if when you saw old couples who've been together all their lives at restaurant tables, they were pissing themselves laughing and just, "Yeah, hey, you fucking tinker! Oh, he's done that joke again with the Parmesan. Every night for 60 years, it still makes me raw." They don't, do they? They stare anywhere but at the face of the person they are. Oh, shit, yeah. Oh, food's here! This is new! Don't you say anything now. This just... Let me enjoy this. I know you're there, I can smell you. And what happens if you are single and you have been for a long time, what you find is people will try and say encouraging things to you. I have friends who can say, "Oh, don't worry, John, there's someone out there for you. Oh, there's someone out there for you," right? Which is obviously lovely to hear, but what they don't seem to understand is what they're also saying implicitly in that sentence is, "You are the one for someone else." That's the bit of it I couldn't deal with. I like the idea there's someone out there I'm supposed to be with. What I don't like the idea is that I could find someone I love and find, you know, humorous and intelligent, and I could look in their eyes and say, "Hey, do you know what the universe had lined up for you?" This, for the rest of your life, that's what you get. I don't know what you did, but you are being punished for it. You're going to wake up to this forever now. Better put some coffee on, he's had a dream about filing again. I alphabetized all of them, pow! I just didn't want to be with anyone, right? And people could relentlessly trying to set you up, and one friend in particular kept saying, "Oh, John, I've got this friend, she's perfect for you." And I said, "Well, if she's a friend of yours, keep her away from me. How's that? Because I will ruin her life. I don't want that to affect our friendship. If she's a friend, but you think, yeah, she's a friend, but I wonder what she'd look like crying. I wonder what my friend would look like if she'd been crippled by one too many tedious comments around the household." "Can I just talk you through how we're supposed to load the dishwasher?" If that's the future you've got in mind for your friend, then you carry on with this little mission. But otherwise, leave me out of it. That's what I thought was fairest, right? But she didn't leave me out of it. What she did is then she introduced this person to all my other friends. Some other friends got on board and then had a house party and they all got on me at once. They said, "Oh, you should meet this girl, John." And then she said, "Oh, I'm telling you, John, you're going to end up marrying this girl." And that really pissed me off. Because she's mapped my entire life out there, hasn't she? With a girl I've never met before. She's basically saying, "Yeah, there's someone out there, John, who likes snooker and sandwich bags." And that's basically all you need, isn't it? Because there'll be no need for chemistry with you because you're such a simple little twit. So I got really annoyed. I thought, "Right, I need to end this now. I need to put an end to all this." So I said, "Right, give me a number then." And they all got really excited and I got a number. And they said, "Oh, do you want a name?" I said, "No, that'll do." I stored it in my phone as my wife. Look what a dickhead I am. Right, because I didn't want to get into a conversation. I didn't want to have to say to them, "Do you know the reason I haven't got a girlfriend is because I don't like myself. I don't want to be with anyone." It's too much information to share with your friends, right? The reason I didn't like myself through my 20s is, one thing, I don't think I'm a very good person, right? And that's because, although I do good things every now and again, I'll be perfectly honest with you, I don't do good things so that the world gets better. I do them so that people see me do them and they like me more. I'm happy to admit that. That is why I do most of the good things I do, and there'll be people in you who are like me, and you'll know you're like that, because every now and again you'll do a good thing by accident and nobody will notice, and you'll be pissed off. That's not a sensible reaction, is it? Good people shouldn't think, "What a fucking waste of time that was. Could have kept that money." Good people think, "Oh, well, good deeds is its own reward." Right, I was in a pub, right, I bought a drink, I held my hand out for the change, right? It's not the biggest hand you're ever going to see in the world, but, it, you know, a few quid will slot in there, lovely, right? So go on, pop it in there, right? And most of it went in there, but then a pound hit that bit, right? Quite a heavy coin, isn't it? And that's quite a spongy bit of the hand. So it didn't just flick off, it went boom. Right? And I watched it, I couldn't go after it, could I? Because I dropped these ones and I had my pint in this hand. So I watched it fly through the air and land right into a charity collection bucket. awkward, right? And when I say bucket, I don't mean like an actual... I mean those things they shake, where that gap is only just big enough for a pound on its side. As a shot from there, it was absolutely remarkable. Right. If I'd meant that, I would have been the coolest person who's ever given money to charity. I've gone, cheers. That one's for the charity. See you later. But obviously she knew I didn't mean it, right? So she's not looking at me, the barmaid, thinking, oh, what a lovely guy giving that pound away. I know what she's thinking. I can see her face. She's thinking...
Oh, look how annoyed he is.
I was annoyed because you can't say anything there, can you? You can't say, you haven't got a key for that, have you? I didn't mean that. That was an accident. I mean, it wasn't an accident. It was your fault. I told you where I wanted it and you sliced the pass. You owe me a pound and another one for the distress. Give me £2, please. Right. I didn't know what to say to get out of this situation, right? So I stared at the thing and I could have been there 15 minutes. I have no idea, right? And then I thought, I know what I'll do. I'll get out of this situation using my sense of humour. Which is a slight problem, because if I've learned anything since I became a comedian, it's that I'm not funny. Not in real life, out and about, you know, when you fire out gags. I just make people tense, because I try too hard, and it's weird. I do little voices and act shit out, and it, you know, like the rhythm of humour is supposed to be fast, isn't it? People are chatting, you go, oh, ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da-ba-da, and someone will go, oh, ba-da-ba-da-da, and they go, ah, ba-da-ba-da-da. Not those words, obviously, but the rhythm of it is there, isn't it? If I do a joke, it tends to go, oh, and I'll go, oh, ba-da-ba-da-da, and I go, oh. What do you think he meant by that? Does it seem to fit in with anything that's happened in the last week? I'll just tell you what I said, and this will be the best illustration, right? I'm there holding my hand out, right, and I looked at her, and I looked down, and I noticed the charity that was being collected for, right? So here's my little zinger to get me out of this situation. You can have this. I said, oh, knowing my luck, I'll probably end up getting prostate cancer now as well. What sort of penis says that to someone? I really stared at her as well, as if to go, oh, go on, enjoy that. I'm a professional. It's fine. I'm that funny all the time. Right. So naturally, she said the only thing you could say when someone says that to you. She went, yeah, you might. Ah, really going to enjoy this beer. That's one of the reasons I didn't want to be with anyone. The other reason is far more unpleasant. The other reason I didn't want to be with anyone is just the hatred that is inside me. Is remarkable. Like, if it was strength, I would be a superhero. I can hate people just instantly. Just the glance of the back of their head, I can just go, prick. He's gone now, he's behind that wall, but I know he's a prick. Out there somewhere, being a prick. And it's the hatred that everyone in this room, you'll feel it once a year. You get it once a year where you're having a bad day and you just take it out. In your head, you take it out on someone whose fault it isn't. You get to the train station and there's someone in front of you whose ticket won't go into the thing. And they seem to think that the solution to that is to try exactly the same thing 1,000 times. shoving it in there. The train left hours ago, still there. Ticket's eroded, hand is just a blooded stump. And you come up behind him. On a normal day, you see that, and it's annoying, isn't it? But you know it happens. You go, oh, Jesus, you've never been on a train before, right? You go around the barrier. I'm sure there are good people in here who would see that and think, oh, I could help in this situation. Oh, excuse me, are you okay? Oh, that's your seat reservation. Just turn it around, okay? And just go, oh, don't worry, we'll do it. Take care, bye. I'm not one. But then you have that one day a year, don't you, when it just, it's out of your control. Everything from the minute you open your eyes has been shit. And then at like 5:30, this is the last straw, and you come up behind him, and before you can even stop yourself, he's like, oh, I wish you were fucking dead. You catch yourself, you know, I'm not that person, I didn't mean it, right? But in that second of selfishness, all you can think is, if you died earlier today, I'd be through that barrier by now. Holding up my existence. I feel like that most of the time. And not about individuals, I elevated beyond that. I now hate just society, just all the time. And summer is the worst, right? I like winter. Winter's a good time for me, because obviously in winter people stay inside, don't they? And they eat stew and they cry. It's a good season for me, winter. Just put veg in and cook it until it's just been in there hours. There you go, Swede. Fuck you. Stay in there until I'm ready for you. I'm too tired to chew now. It's November. Chewing was June. Now I just need mush to shove in this thing so I don't die. That's why with summer, what happens is people go out, don't they? And they do stuff and they have opinions on it and they talk about it. And that's when I start getting pissed off, right? And what happens is when we have good summers, you have real trouble. And it didn't used to be a problem because in this country, obviously, in my lifetime, I don't remember many actual summers. I remember like days where you open the curtains in the morning and you go, sunshine, let's have a breakfast barbecue. And your partner go, well, it's 7:30 in the morning. You go, I know, but there's clouds coming, so let's really, you know, just get out there and set fire to the shed and put a fucking sausage on it, please. Because otherwise, oh, it's raining now, doesn't matter. That was summer, it was fun, that one, wasn't it? Right. Now, the last couple, you had like days where you open the curtains on Monday and it's sunny all week. And that's dangerous. You know you're in trouble because you turn the weather on and the weather people are outside showing you the weather. If they were indoors, you wouldn't believe them, right? But they have to be outside. You switch the weather on and Carol's there going, hello, I'm looking outside in a field, you know. That's look at the time and look at your time. It's happening now, this. It's the sunshine up there. Look, it's very hot. It's not too hot. I'm not dying, but it's because it's quite far away. You know, it's temperate. It's nice. And, you know, and I know it looks like it's just on me in this field, but it's actually because it's so far away. It's on all of us, you know, at all. Experiencing sun, and I know it's Monday and you've got to go to work, but don't worry, it'll still be sunny on Friday as well. And that's the bit where we all go, I beg your fucking pardon. Still sunny on Friday, is it? When I go out and get shit-faced. You're telling me I can get shit-faced outside now, are you? And I can email people now and that will happen, will it? Shit-faced outside on Friday. Right, I'll start emailing everyone. You email everyone you know, and I don't know how it happens. You must be able to put into the email bar, everyone at desks. And it just sweeps a city, right? And whichever city you live in, there's the place you all go, right? And I live here in London, which is, you know, has to be done for a bit, doesn't it? If I'm obviously... Yeah, four very strong opinions there. You make up your own mind how you deal with that little debate. Yeah, all good points. I'm obviously not from here, I'm from the north, but you can't be a comedian up north. I have to move to London, and when the Queen's not looking, I steal a bit of gold, and then I'll go back up north and build a house with it. I'll go, ee, it's in what left, he's come back with gold. Fuck building houses, let's make him king. For now. And I think most people in London don't live here, and those that do live here don't like it. Nobody who lives in London likes it, otherwise Boris Johnson wouldn't be in charge of it. That just wouldn't have happened if anyone cared about this city. Boris Johnson is in charge of a city, a man who is basically a human wet fart. I mean that because he's very much like a wet fart. He's very funny at the time, but you have to check for damage immediately afterwards. What's amazing about Boris Johnson, right, is you see like a clip of him a fortnight where he's trapped down a well or being bummed by a dog or something like that. What you forget is he's at work all the rest of the time doing shit. He's in there, right? And he'll leave. He's leaving in a year. We're going to find out what he's been up to all the rest of the time. The new mayor will come in and go, you know, he was turning the Thames into custard from the bottom upwards. The bottom 6 foot of it now is custard. He's just written here, I wanted to see if you could run across it. Ha ha. Unbelievable. So anyway, what happens in London is everyone goes to the river. Everyone migrates to the river when it's sunny, and they all started emailing each other. This time this year, last summer, they all emailed you. Ian, mate, you seen the Bertie Bever? Right. I don't know the rhyming slang for weather. I haven't. Something like that, wasn't it? Bertie Bever, West Ham legend. Right. You seen the Bertie guy? Yeah, I seen it, mate. Sunshine, innit? Fanshine. Do it out the bamshine. Coming down the river then Friday night, 5 o'clock, get shit-faced and go, nah, fuck that, mate, 4 o'clock, 4 o'clock, work through lunchtime, 4 o'clock, yeah, nice one, that was a banana, it's 2 for £1, what? So what happened in London last summer, everyone went to the river Friday, 4 o'clock, right? I didn't, I had a gig, I went to my gig, right? Obviously no one turned up because they'd all gone to the river, right? That doesn't stop me, I'll quite happily spit bile onto empty seats for 2 hours, wandering up and down, everything's been terrible and one thing wasn't symmetrical, come out of the gig, I get to Waterloo at about 11 o'clock at night, I just want to go home, right? And that's when I realise the carnage that has happened across London. A whole city pissed more so than any stag do I've ever seen in my entire life. And you can tell that because there were no groups of two people, right? No two people are sober enough to walk in tandem with another person. People are just drifting off, like grown men just smashing into train station walls because they've seen Harry Potter and they think one will open up to that magical world where there's that girl where she's not old enough in the films, but she is now, so it doesn't count. I saw her doing that speech on feminism, and I thought, fucking right. Blood all down themselves. People's limbs have stopped working. They're just dragging themselves across the floor, hoovering up chips. And more to the point, the trains are heaving because nobody's left London all day, right? So there's a train there that is full in a way I've only ever seen in documentaries in the third world. You know, when there's like one train a year and if they don't get on it, they don't feed their family. So they're on the roof and they're in the coupling. That's happening at Waterloo Station. Grown adults hanging onto the outside of trains, waiting for them to leave. And the police there saying, I'm afraid you can't travel like that, mate. And these sober people, you'd say, oh God, yeah, tunnels and that. Kill myself, won't I? What am I like? Not piss people. You fuck off, pig. I'm touching the train, I'm on the train. You know if people are starting on the police, this is going to be a tetchy evening. Well, I ain't getting on that train and I ain't getting home, right? And then they realise there's one left to be announced, right? And I think, if I don't get on that, I'm screwed, right? And I've got a good chance because I think when they announce the platform number, I'm the only one here who can still read. So they call the train and I get there. Not only do I get there first. I've got my choice of every seat on the entire train, which for a lot of people is a dilemma because it's too much choice, isn't it? Not for me. I know exactly what seat I want, right? And I want the seat where it's two seats, but it's the one no one else wants, right? Because I want two seats to myself, but I'm too much of a coward to put my bag on the one next to me because, you know, eventually someone will come along and go, could you move your bag, please? Yes, thank you very much, yes. Yeah, I thought you were going to get this one and I'm here now, aren't I? Yeah, look at that. I'm just going to touch you as well with that leg. I am the... Hey, that's my armrest. That's mine. That shitty half a one under the window there. I'm the alpha. Right. So we just pick the shitty seats. And what that is, right, you walk along the train until you see where they've joined two trains together, but there's no divider. So everyone who's in this bit can't get through to that bit. Half your audience, right? Step on here. Don't carry on with the momentum. Just turn around, and there's a little pouch of seats here that nobody notices, right? Look for the table here. Don't sit at the table. Everybody wants the table. You sit just behind the table, right? Nobody sees these seats because they see the table's full. They move on. Sit here on these seats, face backwards. Most people don't like to face backwards. It makes them feel sick. Sit by the window. So people walking this way think there's someone there as well. Go on. Piss off. That's it. Get to my seat and I tuck myself into my little ball of self-righteousness and I think, right, we're going to be all right, we're going to get home. And then the train fills up around me, people on the table, someone sits next to me. Just before we pull out of the station, there's the unmistakable sound of something hitting the back of my chair, which is definitely a human head. I can tell by the sound of it. I think it's either someone who's passed out or, more excitingly, someone who's running for the last train and thinks, shit, I'm going to miss the last train. Maybe if I cut my head off and throw it on the train, I can get my head home, roll back to the flat and call a taxi to get my body. No one's ever thought of that. I'm a genius. It isn't. It's just a girl behind me who's passed out. Her body's not having it, right? And then I sort of want to know how she's got on the train, but I can't turn around because I'll make eye contact with someone and they'll think I want to talk to them. So I go, oh, you got a face, have you? I've got a face, mate. I was born in Bermondsey. Oh, jeez. Keep talking. I find out what happened, right? Because what's happened is a man has carried this lady onto the train, a South African businessman, right, has carried the woman onto the train. And all he needs to do there, he's got to go and get another train, right, so he's not with her. So he needs to just tap these two people here and just say, excuse me, could you help this woman off the train at New Malden, please? I don't know if you can see, but she's absolutely fucked. I'm not actually going to stay and help. She's your responsibility now. Okay, take care. Cheerio now. Bye-bye. That's all he's got to do, but he spots an opportunity here where he thinks, hang on, if I announce to the whole carriage that I've carried this lady onto the train, they'll all think I'm a gentleman hero, right? So instead of doing that, he shouts to all of us, somebody's got to help this woman off the train, please! I've carried her as far as I can, but I can do no more, what a world, what a world! And he's the first individual I take time out to hate. Two reasons I hate him. First of all, if this girl is that drunk, you're not helping her, are you, by putting her on a train? If she's that drunk, she's better off on the platform with the police or back with her friends than she is hurtling towards Portsmouth at 100 miles an hour. No no offence to Portsmouth, but let's be honest, anyone in this room, if you woke up tomorrow and found you were in Portsmouth, your first thought wouldn't be, well, what a wonderful opportunity to explore the historic town of Portsmouth. You'd think, oh, shit, I'm in Portsmouth. I don't live in Portsmouth. Right. Second of all, if we trace back why this girl is that drunk, it's probably because an hour ago he was in a bar with her and he liked her, but he knew his personality was abhorrent, so what he did is every time she asked for a drink, he got her a larger one, right, and she got drunk and they came out and the air hit her, and instead of doing the gentlemanly thing, what he did is he thought, oh, I better put this one on a train, I fucking broke it. He's not a hero, is he? He's just a piece of shit. Dumping a girl on her own on a train, right? But then these two, they bail him out because they went, oh, that's okay, we'll get her off the train, right? And I hated them as well. Just for bailing, and just because all that's happened is they're pissed as well, but because she's more pissed, they now feel sober and responsible. Oh, is she drunk? Oh, we'll deal with this. You see, we only had the 12 Jaeger bombs, so... Don't worry, we'll take care of her. Mind there, I pissed there a little bit, okay. And here's why I say I'm better at hate than anyone else, right? Because at the same time as I'm hating them for getting involved, I'm also hating everyone else for not getting involved, right? It doesn't have to be consistent, my hate. I can be sat there going, there's a woman in distress here and you people did nothing. This country's gone to their fucking docks. Fire it. Oddly, at this point, the only person on the train I don't hate is her, because she's unconscious. She's behaving impeccably. Nice and quiet and still she is. Anyway, he gets off the train, they're helping her, I sort of start to calm down, the train goes, I think, it's all being taken care of, John, it's not your responsibility. And about 5 minutes into the journey, there's a sound from behind me of sort of a semi-thick liquid hitting the floor. Oh. About 4 feet, and I think, she's never having a can of soup. A bold snack on a train, that, isn't it? Heinz Big Soup, I think, from the sound of that. Right. It's obviously not she's just been sick, right? She's puking on a train, which is the point at which she wakes up. Puking on a train, she doesn't remember getting on, so she gets upset, she starts crying, and the crying causes her body to convulse, which makes her sick again. Right, so she's a perfect little sandwich of misery going on behind me. Now, what that does is rocket her up the league to my most hated person on the train. Remarkable form. Relegations onto Champions League, that is amazing. The only reason I hate her is because all I wanted with this seat, I just wanted to get home, and now I'm going to have to move because sick is coming under the thing with all my shoes and my bag, and now I really start to lose it. I just think, this is ridiculous now. You can't even get on a train anymore without getting somebody else's insides on you. Stomp out of the thing. I start looking around for people who are just going to look at me and go, oh, no, mate, what a bloody world, right? I look at everyone and I realise they're not sympathising. They're angry at me, right? Because they're as pissed as she is and they think I'm elevating myself out of this situation. They're looking at me going, oh, look at Mr. Fucking Clean Shoes. Mr. Lardy's arse too good to have arse sick all over him, is it? He was sick on me, mate. I didn't move. I just pissed on him a little bit. And that's when I really lost it. I was like, this country is knackered. All that's happened today is the weather has been nice enough that you haven't been driven indoors. That's all that's happened. And if I'd been outdoors, I'd be as pissed as everyone else, right? I'm no better. Come down with us, John, mate. Floats. Well, the problem is, I think it's fine enough for me, I sort of live here, I knew the signs, right? But somewhere on this train is a nice little Spanish family. Do you know what I mean? A nice little Spanish family have come to London on their summer holidays, and they've been looking forward to this all year. They probably booked the tickets at Christmas and gave them to the kids as Christmas presents. They go, here you go, Javier, here is your Christmas present. Just get it out of your system, because it ain't getting any better. Perfectly serviceable Spanish accent, that is. Can't speak Spanish, can they? Or you wouldn't be able to understand. I mean, you're lucky they speak English around the house.
Hey, Feliz Navidad.
Yeah. All right, we'll get back into character now because you put me off.
Nachos.
Yeah. I'm back.
Here you go, Javier. Here is your Christmas present.
They go, oh, what is he? What is he?
Don't.
This Christmas, we're going on our holidays to London Town!
Ah, London Town! London 2012 Olympic London!
Yeah, London 2012 Olympic London, but we're going there in 2013 because it's cheaper.
I
book us an apartment on the edge of the city. Every day we wake up and we have some breakfast. We get the train into town. We go to Buckingham Palace. We watch a show. You can stay up late every night. And then we get the last train back to our apartment in the city of London. Fucking London! Don't swear.
Good dad. Responsible.
And when we get there, please don't speak in English because people will laugh in your face. As it turns out. And these are the people who want to leave Europe because of Senor Nigel Farage. On this train now, this nice little Spanish family who came to London because they watched the Olympics and all that bullshit we put out. We went, oh, London, yeah, we all wear matching tracksuits and we help each other. Do come. Now they're seeing the truth. They're on this train and they're going to go back to Spain, aren't they? And their friends are going to say, hey, how was your holiday in London? And they're going to go, let me tell you something about London, yeah? You get the train in London, fuck me. You get the train in London, everybody is puking and shitting, crying, like, hey, I puke you. Don't worry, you puke me, I piss you. You have to swim out of the fucking train. And then their friends are going to say, Jesus, why was everybody so drunk? Was it a festival or something? They're going to go, no, it was his sunshine. They wake up in the morning, they say, I don't know what that is. I better drink until he's gone away again. Not the best mime to have on the DVD, that, is it? The only time I hate, like, all of us with that just universality is when I watch Take Me Out. That's the only other time. I just think we've ruined this. Whatever we had has gone now. If you've never seen it, well done. Whatever you've done until now has been correct. It's basically, to sum it up, everything that's gone wrong with society since Blind Date. That's what it is. Blind Date, you had nice, it was just limited numbers, wasn't it, of nervous people, and you'd have Scylla come out, and she'd go, I hate everybody, and you'd have a little student here shitting himself like that. So we're going, now there's three girls over there. You go, girls, I know, I can smell them. Never met one before now, right? So you go, now the girls are over there behind the screen, so you can't judge them on their looks, that's key. So if you want to get to know about them, you've got to ask them a question, preferably the kind of question you'd never actually ask a human being in your life. Never in the history of dating has someone walked up to someone at a bar and gone, God, I saw you over there and I just had to... Two martinis, please. I just had to know. I mean, if you were a fruit... what fruit would you be? But it was good enough for Blind Date. He'd ask that question. She'd trot round, she'd ask the question of the girls like that, and he'd have three girls here, and they were gradually less nervous. That was the fun of it, wasn't it? They get cheekier, right? So the first girl's too nervous, she's just passed out on the floor. Second girl's, you know, perfectly normal girl. She'd go, oh, I don't know, cherries. People like cherries. Oh, they've got a stone in. Oh, I don't know, give me more time. She'd go, no, there's no time for that. Number three. Right, and number three is our favourite. She'd go, bananas. We go, way! Because we knew what she meant, didn't she, right? Obviously, she hasn't said it because it's tea time and your nan's watching. Say that, can you? You could all enjoy the programme together. Then your nan could watch that and she'd go, oh, very good bananas. Lots of potassium in bananas. you wouldn't ruin it for her, would you? You wouldn't go, oh, it's, yeah, no, she means dicks, actually. Yeah, it's nothing to do with vitamin. If you imagine the shape, you say, up, that's why she said bananas. And the reason you wouldn't say that is because obviously your nan knows exactly why she said bananas. Your nan's just a bit further on than you in terms of her denial at what society has become. She's just pretending, do you know what? Maybe we're not talking about dicks at tea time. Because the truth is, if you did say that to your nan, she'd go, oh, I knew that, see, we couldn't get bananas in the war, you had to use carrots. You go, ah! It's just a better time, a time of innuendo and play. There was no sex on Blind Date, was there? Just get to the end and she'd go, do you want to pick one of the girls, love? It doesn't really matter because we got you on as a joke and they're all going to be gutted when they see your face. And it shapes people, it shapes how you feel about dating. I grew up with that and I thought, that's from, you know, one day I too will appear from behind a wall and disappoint three women at once. Need to have sex, we'll just have a game of Scrabble somewhere and we'll never see each other again. That'd be nice. So now's Take Me Out, which is just basically live shagging. Right, you're watching the bit where a man is
I mean, it's such a toxic program, it has to be filmed underground, right? And we know it's filmed underground because the man is lowered in from the sky in a lift, right? And he's some new toxic breed of bellend who, when he gets in a lift, gets in a lift and hears music and starts fucking dancing to it. I'll tell you what, my name's Dean and I'm from Bradford, and I think if I keep shouting that loud enough, I'm gonna get fucking lit. He gets lowered into a pit, and there's no screens, they just basically goes, that one there, and not that one, no, that one. Right. And then they get to the end and they go up these stairs here, supposedly to the Isle of Fernando's, but it doesn't exist, I've checked. They just start shagging each other on the stairs, right, and a producer comes and pushes a button and they slide into a skip and they get wheeled away to make Finder's lasagnas. Still need meat, don't they, Finders? You've got to ask where they're getting it from. They're sexually desperate, that's where. I thought, that'll be my destiny. That's how I'll meet a girl one day. I'll be walking past a hotel and they say, oh, you're here for the cleaning convention, Mr. Richardson? It's just downstairs. Press the button and I'll hear the music and I'll think, oh, shit. Touché, Paddy. Here we go. But obviously, as is the way with my life, the less thinking I do, the better, to be honest. And I've found that if I don't play any part in my own life, it turns out all right. Because what happened is I went to a bar, and this girl that everyone's been trying to set me up with, she was in there, and we met each other and we started talking. I was so freaked out the first night that I just didn't know what was happening, because it's bad enough meeting someone for the first time, but being told that you're not only going to get on with them, but you're going to end up marrying them, just mind-blowing. So and then we get to the end, and I think, well, that's taken care of that. That's, I've probably put her off quite enough with my personality there to stave off any future happiness. She'll go back to my friend. She'll go, yeah, no, I met him. He's, isn't he? He really talks like that, doesn't he? I thought he just did it for telly, but I was stood next to him, like, And then, like, a couple of weeks later, I went to something else, and she was there as well at random, and we're chatting away. And then now I've got time to be nervous now, because she comes over and she likes me, and that's, oh, shit, she likes me. And then I like her, and that means I need to start being, you know, like that guy. Like, not that guy. I don't know who that is. Yeah, that guy. A prick. I need to be someone that she wants to be with, right? And I don't know what that is, because I've never really played, like, the cool, yeah, God, I'm just amazing, you should totally be with me, right? So we're chatting away, and it goes quiet for a bit, and I went, oh, what are you doing next weekend, right? And she went, oh, nothing. She thinks I'm going to go, oh, do you want to go to the cinema or something? I went, brilliant, do you want to go on holiday? We call that move 0 to 60, that one. And funnily enough, she pulled her face exactly like I was driving at her in a truck. But to be fair, it was such a shock move, she'd already answered the cinema question. She didn't have time to rethink, so she went, yeah. And I basically just gone, do you want to be in a foreign country with no phone signal and me? So then she's now I've got to go away and book something, right? And I can't do that. I've given her the impression I'm the kind of guy, do you know what I mean? If I've got 2 days off, I just book a flight and I see what happens. I'm not that kind of person. I'm the kind of guy, if I've got 2 days off, I have a good tidy up the first day, and the second day I sit still and I don't touch anything. This is not going to end well for us, right? So I need to go through my Rolodex of countries. We're not 2 days, can't go too far, right? So look at countries, and I judge countries very quickly when I go there, because it's your holiday, innit? You want to have a good time, and little things can ruin that. So Cyprus is off, because I've been there. It's nice and sunny and that, but I don't know if you know this, they've still got seeds in their grapes. It's not good enough, is it, when you're on your holiday? Oh, I'd love one, thank you. Oh, what else have you put weapons in? No, Cyprus is off. Crete's off as well. I went to Crete. Lovely. Home of the first civilization we had as a society, the Minoans, right? I went there, you know, learn and enjoy myself. They've got a little bin in their toilet, and that's full of other people's shitty toilet paper. That. Found that out quick. What's this for here? Or your wipe on your... I'll be at the airport. Even like my own shit. Just the minute it's gone. Just flush. Never happened. Never happened. Probably next to other people's. Oh, God, no, no. I'll come back when you got history and pipes. You send me a text. So opt for Portugal, right? I think Portugal's far enough away that it's romantic, isn't it? It's like, oh, my God, he just took me to Portugal. But it's not so far away that there's a lot of travelling. It's weird, right? So book it. We get to the airport. And very obvious at this point, she did not think this was actually going to happen. Right? She is scared. She's answering questions I didn't ask. So I say something like, oh, do you want something to eat? And she said, oh, I don't know, really. I've told my dad what flight we're going to be on and when we're going to be back. The curious answer to my question. Quite the riddle, this young lady. So, we get out to Portugal, right? And then I think, come on, John, just relax this girl, show her a good time, be cool, be the guy, do you know what I mean? So I, I keep doing that, be the guy who's like a pigeon. So, you know, I pull my first move when we land. I said, hey, let's not get the coach to the airport. I'll go and get us some cash out and we'll get a taxi. It's a bit more romantic, isn't it? More time together and we'll get there quicker, right? So I go over, put my digits in. It becomes apparent at this point that my bank have viewed a holiday for two as suspicious activity on my account. They have cancelled my card. That's what's happened there. Touché to the bank, really. You know, sometimes they phone you. They basically leave me alone now. They used to phone me a lot to check on my pissed 3 a.m. purchases. Yeah, John, it's the bank here. Someone's just bought a Labyrinth duvet set.
That was me!
You've already got one.
I wanted a spare one!
They just leave me alone now. They go, I just fucking... can you believe that? And they go, don't blame me. I called him last week. They've not called me for ages. This must have flagged off alarms across the entire banking network, this. Just, yeah, John, someone's pretending to be happy on your bank account, mate. It's all right, we've cancelled it. I said, no, it's me. And then, oh, shit, we can have some money tomorrow then. Right, so now I go back with my tail between my legs, right, we cobble our way to the hotel, and I think, right, you're behind now, be, like, do something. So I went, oh, let's check in really quickly, it's still sunny, we'll go for a walk along the beach, right, chuck our cases in, get down to the beach, right. She's dressed appropriately, so she just whips something off, and she's in a bikini, like, walking down the beach like that. I think, I don't want to be unromantic, so I take my shoes and socks off. And we're walking along the beach, we get a few minutes down, and I think, I tell you what, this sand's hot. The sand is too hot. It's not like holiday nice hot, it's like, this is burning my skin. Too hot. And if this was metal, we would both stop each other and say, too hot to walk on this, isn't it, actually? Unsafe, right? Because it's sand, I'm supposed to enjoy it. I'm not enjoying it. I said, can you stop there, please? Shoes and socks back on. And then I realised I haven't put any sun cream on. We checked out so quickly, so I put my coat back on as well. Not the sexiest walk down the beach I've ever seen, if I'm honest. She looks lovely, like she's in a bounty advert. I'm behind her like a beekeeper.
Oh, back it burns you!
Then we get back to the hotel. I'm nearly dying of heat stroke at this point, so I have to go upstairs and be hosed down. In the shower, and then I play my final move then. I think, right, we'll get to the room. I say, hey, let's not go down to the restaurant. Let's have room service. Sex, that's what that means, surely. So I give her the menu. I said, have whatever you like. She said, oh, I'm going to have the steak and chips. What are you going to have? I said, oh, I'm going to have the vegetarian pizza because that's the only option. They bring the food up nice on a trolley with the cloches and that, and she's in the loo when it arrives, so I licked her steak all over. Oh, sweet flavour, I remember you. Oh. I didn't swallow any, so it doesn't count. She comes out of the toilet. There's your steak. Look, oh, looks lovely, that, doesn't it? Lovely and moist. Let's pull the thing off. There's my pizza, right? It's cooked. It looks fine, but it's been wrapped in cling film after it's been cooked. I've never seen before, but I don't want her to know I've never seen that before in case she thinks I'm an idiot. So I go, oh, God, yeah, no, they do that in Portugal all the time. It sort of goes back to the Civil War. I don't even know if they had a civil war in Portugal, much less why it should lead to them wrapping things up in cling film. Eat quickly about that, and then we open the wine, and then the food's finished, and then we finish the wine together, and it does start to get a little bit romantic, and I think, ooh, I'm going to be sick. I'm going to projectile vomit right into her face in the next few seconds. Oh, no, no, I'm not, no. I am going to shit my pants. Shit myself. Oh, no, I'm not. It's both, is what it is. It's both. And I spend the next 24 of our romantic 36-hour retreat shitting and puking about 3 metres away from her sleeping head. In the toilet. I'm not just in the corner of the room. Shh, go to sleep. I'm going to the toilet, but it's fucking there. She knows what's going on. But in my head, I think I can get away with this. So I make a different excuse. Every time I have to go, I go, ooh, I'm just going to go and stretch my hamstrings. Have a good old 3 a.m. stretch of those hamstrings. Come out of the toilet, I go, ooh, I just need to blow my nose. Just need to blow my nose. Feels like there's quite a lot up there as well. So if you're splashing and screaming, don't you worry about that. Definitely just blowing my nose. back and forth all night. About 5 in the morning, I start to feel a bit better, so I think I'll have a fruit smoothie, and all that does is make my sick red. I wonder if that's blood. Well, I guess we'll find out if I'm dead tomorrow. All night. And then as I wake up in the morning, I'm still like, there's a little chance she hasn't worked out what's going on, right? So we wake up and she says to me, do you want me to go to the chemist and get you something so you don't shit to death? Just in the corner, I went, yes, please. there's nothing left. My spine come out about 2 hours ago. It's just sadness coming out now. She goes to get me medicines and things, and I'm well enough to fly back, right? And we get back, and obviously you just think, well, that's that happiness dealt with. That'll be the end of that. Because I'm looking at her the way I look at myself, and I'll be very honest with you, that's the kind of person I am. And if the boot had been on the other foot, we'd have got back, and I'd have gone, oh, well, actually, let's not shake hands. probably never see each other again, I think, should we? Because that was really horrific. Really, I know you couldn't smell it because it was yours, but I'm going to need therapy now. Really is. You didn't mention that early on, that you couldn't leave the UK without exploding. it's unpleasant. I'm going to go this way, you go that way, and no, keep my case, have it incinerated. I don't want anything from this weekend to ever touch me again, if you don't mind. But she's better than me, so much better a person. So when we land, she just goes, oh, that was a shame for you, wasn't it? What do you want to do next? I'm like, are you high? Did you see what I did out there? I mean, in a way, it's the best thing I could have done. Because once you've done that on a second date, what can you possibly get wrong in a relationship? Once you go, oh, I've put a red sock in with that white load. Yeah, I've seen you shit the bed. I think we'll probably ride this hurdle, don't you? I'm not recommending it if you're on a first date. Don't think, oh, I might shit everywhere later. I'm just saying, it instantly I knew that she would look after me and she wouldn't judge me on the worst points, right? So, I mean, obviously we're together because what else can I do? She's now, we go out now, she's in my house now, touching stuff, moving it around. Fine. Absolutely fine, because we're in love. And I work nights, so when I get back, she's asleep and I move it all back. Just going to stay down here and have a whiskey and put the knives back in the middle of the cutlery drawer. As per the argument, I don't really think I've got better at it either. I don't really think I've settled into this new life. I remain a bellend. Everything I do, like the first bit of post we had that had both our names on it, I thought that's a significant moment, isn't it? So I called her down the stairs and I said, oh, we've had our first letter with me and you. Come down. I took a picture of it, right? I had to delete the picture of my friend in the hat. Not happening. Not happening. I said, oh, come downstairs. And she said, oh, what is it? And I opened it. I said, oh, it's a bill from the council because I don't get single occupancy discount anymore. Oh dear. Good moment to flag up that, isn't it? She said, oh, what does that mean? I said, well, it's basically an accurate figure to the penny of how much more it's going to cost me to be in love with you. Really? you pop back upstairs, I'm going to do some sums. Love versus council tax. I wasn't lying either as well earlier. That is a direct quote from our relationship, that one. Can I just talk you through how we're supposed to load the dishwasher? I noticed that you've put the... this is the sharp chopping knife here, but you've put that facing upwards. I just wanted to know, really, are you trying to kill me? What if I'd slipped? Or is that the game, is it? You fill the dishwasher, I empty it, slice my hand open, bleed to death. You get the house. Good luck paying the council tax. That's gone through the fucking roof. Where are you going? I haven't finished. Come back, please. This is the wooden handle chopping knife. It shouldn't be in there anyway. You don't soak wood, do you? Look at the laminated list. Complete bellend. The only reason we're together is because I've discovered a thing that you can do in relationships, and if you're in one or not in one, this is useful information to know. There's a thing you can do which is called lying. Right. What that is, it's an absolute godsend. It means you get to do one thing, but tell them you've done another, and your relationship is basically salvaged as a result, right? I'm not talking about big things like affairs or stealing, just little things. Like, for example, we have separate toothpaste now, right? And I've told her that's because she likes the whitening toothpaste, but I need the sensitive gums one because I have sensitive gums. I don't have sensitive gums, I never have. We have separate toothpaste because she squeezes the tube from the middle and it makes me want to jump out of the window. Obviously, best we don't have that conversation. You're right, John. No, I'm not. I just touched the toothpaste again. Yeah, that really made me feel physically sick. It was squidgy at either end, but so hard in the middle. How do you know when there's none left? Because there's none left. No, no. You're supposed to roll it from the bottom, aren't you? It's better. Do you mean better or just less fun? So now she has hers over there. She's got hers that she can mangle and garrot and do trap in the door, or I've driven over by tanks. So whatever she does that makes it look that way. And I've got mine over here like a little minty sleeping bag. Oh, so tight. Oh, incredible. There's one thing I did, which is like, this is... As far as I'm concerned, if you stay with someone after this sort of thing happens, everything that happens thenceforth is your fault, right? And if I've become happy, it's completely not my choice, right? And this is also the last bit as well. This is, and not the pretendy last bit. This is the bit that would be the encore if I was going to trick you into pretending I've finished. But you all know there's another bit, but I'm not going to do it until you love me enough. So I'll just tell all the bits and then we'll all go home. Because it's sad, isn't it? What happens is I tend to get to about here and I think they've had enough and I just fuck off and don't do the last bit. So, and I'll do all the stories in a row and then you can go home because I need to stay behind and sort that fucking business out. Currently thinking I haven't noticed that that's been following me around for the last 2 hours. Looks like a bull that's had its balls ripped out. I've just left him hanging. Horrible. Oh, you pop off home and I'm going to really pull that. You've got to twist the mic slowly. It takes hours, but it's absolutely delicious. That's my encore. What happened when we first started going out, me and this lady? Obviously, we met by chance at this bar, as I said, and we had a few drinks. We went back our separate ways, right? And then a few weeks later, I bumped into her again. Obviously, you know each other a little bit more, so we had a few more drinks, and we're a bit further on. So come the end of the evening, without giving too much away, we did not go back to separate houses. She came back to Casa del Rico for a good time. Mainly, I think, because she doesn't know I call it that. Wanna come back to Casa del Rico? No, I don't, and kill yourself. Bye-bye. I'll just call it my house when I'm talking to civvies. I said, do you wanna come back to my house? And she said, yeah, we went back to my house, and I did my best. It's the fairest thing to say. I don't wanna get anyone's hopes up. Tried my hardest, I did all my move. Which is to say, I touched everything for an even number of times on each side. That's what I'm packing in the bedroom. I may leave you unsatisfied, I will not leave you unbalanced. And you're lying there at night thinking, he only did that one twice. I'm getting there. Tip for the gentleman in the room, don't count out loud. That's... creates the impression you want to finish. 5, 6, next. My turn now, and all my bits are symmetrical. You're welcome. Or my bit. Anyway, do whatever, and then go to bed, and wake up in the morning, and I drive her to the station. Right, not straight away again, because I know something about lovemaking, and that's not the way you wake a lover, is it? Uh-oh. Tick-tock, fuck off a clock. So you allow each other to wake up gently and then you put Holmes Under the Hammer on and you lie about how capable... Oh, yeah, I've done a bit of stud partitioning. Anyway, I'm just going to go downstairs and make some toast before you ask me what that is. Go downstairs, get some breakfast, come back up and you go, oh, there's some toast over there for you on the desk so you don't get crumbs in the bed. whisper the last bit. She'll find out soon enough. Right. Eventually, she said, oh, shit, I need to go to work. I said, don't worry about that. I'll drive you to the station. Right, so we'll get in the car and we're driving. When you go out, that's when you realise everyone you think knows what you've done, so you're giggly and you know, oh, I had a really good time. She said, oh, I'd like to see you again. I said, oh, I'd like to see you again. And she said, oh, do you want my number then so we can plan a date? I said, of course I do. I said, oh, I'm driving. I'll give you my number. You call me, you'll have my number. So I give her my number, right? She rings me. That's when I remember I've got Bluetooth. The whole car lights up and across the dashboard come the words, my wife. I forgot I already had a number. I was pissed when I did that. That's a tense moment, that, I'll be honest, right at the beginning. I might as well have just pulled my top off and had a tattoo that said, I'll kill you and wear your skin. I'm glad you've had a good time. I've been following you for months. Don't you throw away a lot of broccoli? People do, don't they, because it goes soft, but it's still good for soups. And that, if you'll believe, is the last line of the show. So, no real excuse for that, is there? Thank you very much. Thank you all for coming. Have a safe journey back, and I hope you enjoyed the show, and I'll see you next time. Thank you for coming.